The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off the Reader's Digest with a little bit of humor. How's that sound? While serving in South Korea, and this is humor in uniform, by the way. While serving in South Korea, I was assigned guard duty. The ensign issued me a gun and a whistle, but I quickly realized there were no bullets. Brandishing the empty weapon, I asked, "What do I do if I run into trouble?" The ensign replied, "That's what the whistle is for." During basic training, our drill sergeant often led us in a game of Simon Says to help teach us the marching commands. "I bet you can't get me out," a private insisted. Challenge accepted. The drill sergeant went through the commands, sometimes beginning with Simon Says and sometimes not. The private was as good as he claimed and stayed in the game until the sergeant commanded Simon Says, "Jump up." The private leaped into the air and landed again. "You're out," the sergeant shouted. Simon said, "Jump up," but he didn't say, "Jump down." By the way, since this is the first day of December when this program is being broadcast, I welcome you to the last month of 2020, and thank goodness it's the last month. I will be so happy when that ball drops on midnight on December 31st. I hope you feel that way, too. Maybe next year will be a little better for health-wise and everything else. All right, let's do a health thing. This is a little out of date, but not entirely, because it's still pretty pertinent. 50 virus facts you need to know. We're inundated with news about COVID-19 and other viruses, but how much do you really know about how they work and whom they target? There's a long-standing argument in scientific circles over how to classify viruses. They're not inanimate because they multiply, have genes, and evolve. Yet they're not alive, as we don't have any cells, can't convert food into energy, and can't survive on their own. Viruses are biological zombies. Now that's a good description. They have one mission, to find a host and use it to replicate. They produce by hijacking the host cells, eventually causing them to burst and die. That's why viruses that infect humans nearly always cause illness. Fortunately, just as we know a great deal about how viruses do their damage, so do we know how to fend them off. These facts are a good place to start. Number one, there are many more viruses than you think. We often think of just a few viruses, influenza, HIV, and now coronavirus, but there are more plentiful microbes on the planet. There are about 320,000 types that infect mammals, but just 219 are known to infect humans, according to the U.S. National Library of Medicine. Number two, they're even in the rain. The next time you dance in the rain or catch snowflakes on your tongue, you might want to consider the fact that it's literally raining viruses. Viruses and other microorganisms get swept up into the atmosphere in small particles from soil and sea spray, returning to the earth via rain, snow, and sandstorms, according to a study published in Nature. Luckily, most of them aren't infectious. Figuring how contagious they are is both an art and a science. This is number three. One way to measure viral spread, RO, pronounced R-naught, which is the average of how many people may be infected by a single person with the virus. If the R-naught is 4, then each infected person could spread the disease to about 4 others. The ideal R-nil is less than 1, which means the virus is dying out in a population. But calculating R-naught is far from straightforward. It is based on biological, social behavior, and environmental factors that can change rapidly, as we're well aware now in COVID. 4. You can get some viruses more than once. There's a popular myth that once you've had a virus, you're immune to it. But that's not always the case, says Kathleen Doss, MD, an allergist and immunologist from Michigan Allergy, Asthma and Immunology Center in Oak Park. When you get a virus, your body builds up antibodies to fight it. Those antibodies stay in your system, helping you ward off future infections. This is also how vaccines work. However, not everyone makes enough antibodies, and they can wear off over time, which is why you need a booster shot of some vaccines. In addition, viruses can mutate, making your antibodies effective against a new strain. Number five, viruses and bacteria may be hard to tell apart. It's often difficult to tell, based on symptoms, whether an illness is caused by virus or bacteria. But lab tests can confirm the culprit. Unlike viruses, bacteria are single-celled organisms that can live and reproduce on their own. Number six, you can be contagious without ever showing symptoms. Some viruses, including those that cause herpes, COVID-19, and AIDS, can be spread via asymptomatic people. they never had signs of the illness. And pre-symptomatic people, they don't have symptoms yet, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. Some people may even be super spreaders, infecting dozens to hundreds of other people without even realizing it. Take precautions to prevent spreading viruses even when you don't feel sick. Number 7. You can be sued for knowingly spreading some viruses. While it's unlikely anyone will take you to court for spreading the flu around the office, but please stay home when you feel ill, you can be sued if you were knowingly infect someone with an incurable virus such as HIV or herpes. For instance, the singer Usher has been sued by sexual partners for not disclosing his herpes status. Similar, actor Charlie Sheen has been sued twice for exposing women to HIV without telling them. Number 8. If you're very overweight, you need to be extra cautious. Obese people are contagious with the flu virus 42% longer than those who aren't obese, according to the research in the Journal of Infectious Diseases. Because obesity is linked to many health problems, it may affect your immune system. Extra weight may make the flu shot less effective, too. Number 9. The flu can trigger heart attacks. The influenza virus does not just irritate your chest and sinuses. It also causes widespread inflammation throughout your body. That can increase the risk of developing blood clots that can trigger a heart attack, according to a study in the New England Journal of Medicine. Number 10. Cold air can make it easier to get sick. Going out into the cold won't make you sick on its own, says Sarilyn Mark, MD, President and CEO of SolarMed Solutions in Washington, D.C. But if you're in the cold often, your body adapts by allowing your mucous membranes to dry up. When the mucus dries up, it can't protect you, and a virus can get in. Number 11. Nail biting is a no-no. Your fingers pick up germs easily, and chewing on them gives viruses a one-way ticket to your body. Cut your nails to keep them short and try to keep your fingers away from your nose and mouth. Number 12. Staying up late can slow your recovery. A study published in 2019 in the Journal of Experimental Medicine found that a good night's sleep can boost the effectiveness of specialized immune cells called T cells. Sleep as much as possible when you're sick to give your body a chance to recover. Number 13. Cold showers are not a fever cure. You may have been told by a parent or grandmother that an ice bath or a cold shower is a good way to lower the fever quickly. But cold water can cause shock and may end up spiking your temperature higher, says Patricia Wiley-Williams, MD, a professor in the chair of the Department of Pediatrics at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. Lukewarm water is best to help break a fever, she says. Number 14. Secondhand smoke increases your risk of getting sick. You already know that tobacco smoke, whether you're the smoker or not, damages your lungs. That goes double when you're sick because smoke weakens the immunity and can make congestion and coughing even worse. Number 15. COVID-19 isn't a super deadly plague. People hear the word pandemic and automatically think mass deaths. But most people who develop COVID-19 will recover, stresses Lynn Horowitz, MD, a pulmonary specialist at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City. Most people get better at home and on their own, but you could be in a long course of illness that lasts several weeks, he says. If you have chest pain, shortness of breath, or severe dehydration, please go to the hospital. Number 16. Vitamin D might help. The relationship between COVID-19 and vitamin D isn't entirely clear, but a recent analysis of preliminary research published in The Nutrient found that having low levels of vitamin D is linked with more severe symptoms, increasing vitamin D levels may provide some protection by reducing your risk of getting infected with or dying from the coronavirus or the flu. Number 17. Yes, you should wear a mask. The CDC recently urged all Americans to wear cloth face covering, but they can help lower the spread of the viruses as well. Wearing a mask doesn't completely prevent you from getting sick, but if everyone wore them in public places, the rate of infections and community spread could be cut significantly, says Dr. Horowitz. Number 18. COVID toes are a thing. While it mainly produces respiratory symptoms, the virus that causes COVID-19 has been found to be capable of attacking most anywhere in your body, including your toes, says Matthew G. Hines, MD, a hospitalist and internist at Tucson Medical Center in Arizona. This symptom looks a lot like chilblains, which is redness, swelling, and itching of the toes for the fingers in cold weather. Number 19. Loss of taste or smell is an early warning sign. Another unusual warning sign of COVID-19 is losing your sense of taste and smell, says Dr. Heitz. For some people with mild keloids, this is the only symptom, and it's more likely to appear in younger people, he says. It's not clear what causes this, but the disease provokes a profound inflammatory response throughout the body that could somehow impede the functioning of the senses. COVID-19 can hurt your brain, number 20. A review of scientific literature published in June in the Annals of Neurology found that half of hospitalized COVID-19 patients experienced neurological symptoms, including headaches, dizziness, difficulty concentrating, strokes, and seizures. Researchers speculate this may be due to increased inflammation, lack of oxygen, an autoimmune reaction, or a clotting disorder triggered by the virus. 21. Herpes complex virus might cause Alzheimer's disease. Could a pesky little cold sore be responsible for destroying a person's memory? Research over the past 20 years suggests a link between the herpes simplex virus, HSV-1, which causes cold sores, and Alzheimer's disease. A Taiwanese study found that people with HSV infections had almost 3 times the risk of developing dementia later in life as those who were virus-free. Those who then took antiviral medication to treat their herpes cut their dementia risk by 90%. 22. Celiac disease might be caused by a virus. This autoimmune bowel condition affects an estimated 1 in 100 people worldwide, reports the Celiac Disease Foundation. New research published in Science suggests that it may be partly caused by the immune system's response to a common virus called arenovirus. Number 23. Shingles could raise the risk for stroke and heart attack. A severe case of shingles, a disease caused by the varicella zoster virus, the same one that causes chickenpox, can raise your risk for stroke, heart attack, and death. A meta-analysis of more than 20 years of research published in PLOS One found that even one case of shingles is associated with significant increase of brain and heart events. 24 to 36. Viruses can linger in many places. Viruses are tenacious and can survive for quite a long time on surfaces outside the human body. Exactly how long they remain infectious depends on the type of surface and the environmental conditions. In lab environment, the COVID-19 virus stayed active for 2 to 3 days on plastic and metal surfaces and for 24 hours on cardboard and paper, according to a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Among the objects in your home that could harbor viruses, phones, railings, remotes, keyboards, faucets, door and cabinet handles, sheets, pillowcases, and blankets. In public places, be certain to clean your hands after touching faucets, door and escalator handles, ATM and other keypads, gas pump handles, weights at the gym, and utensils at buffets and salad bars. Number 7. Ebola and the Zika viruses can be transmitted sexually. You know that if you want to avoid sexually transmitted viruses such as herpes and HIV, you need to use protection when you have sex. Many other viruses can be transmitted through semen or vaginal fluids. In 2018, researchers discovered the Zika virus could be transmitted sexually. A separate study found that traces of the deadly Ebola virus in the semen of people who had recovered from it up to 2 years after they were sick. Number 38. Zika virus might kill brain cancer. Not all virus side effects are bad. While Zika virus can have devastating effects on our fetal brains, its ability to target brain tissue may be one day help treat glioblastoma, a common type of brain cancer. Number 39. Rabies is the most deadly virus. Nearly 100% of people who get infected with the rabies virus will die from it, making it the most lethal known virus. To date, only 14 people have survived the disease after showing symptoms. The disease is also nearly 100% preventable with a vaccine, according to the CDC. If you get the vaccine before any exposure, it can prevent an infection, but it also works if you get the shot soon after being exposed. As most cases are caused by being bitten by an infected animal, it's important to see your doctor after any animal bite, no matter how small. Number 40. If you can't tuck your chin to your chest, call your doc. If a stiff, sore neck is one of the first signs of viral meningitis, a serious illness that may follow exposure to many common viruses, including enteroviruses and those that cause herpes, influenza, and measles. If you have cold or flu-like symptoms that progress to a severe headache, light sensitivity, lethargy, and a neck so stiff you can't easily bend it forward, call your doc stat. Number 41. You can get rid of one virus with duct tape. Warts aren't caused by cuddling with toads, but rather by an infection with the human papillomavirus. The unsightly bumps are usually benign and will usually go away eventually on their own. One home remedy that may speed up the healing time is covering them with duct tape. According to a study published by the JAMA Pediatrics, in fact, researchers found that duct tape therapy was significantly more effective than cryotherapy for the treatment of common warts. Number 42. Avoid the sun if you are prone to cold sores. Once you've had a herpes infection, the virus lies dormant in nerve cells in your skin and may reemerge as another cold sore in the same places as before, according to the U.S. National Library of Medicine Recurrence is often triggered by sun exposure. Number 43. There is no cure for the flu and other viruses. Sad, but true. The best treatment is prevention through vaccines and lifestyle changes, says Dr. Doss. However, antiviral medications such as oseltamivir, Tamiflu, can help you feel better faster, and they can make your symptoms less severe, she says. Number 44. Don't ask for antibiotics for your viral infection. Antibiotics kill bacteria, but they don't work on viruses at all. Still, many doctors report feeling pressured to prescribe antibiotics by patients who insist on them despite having a viral infection, such as the flu, according to a study published in the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine. In fact, the researchers found that too many people are convinced that antibiotics will help their viral sepsis. Up to only one-third of all antibody prescriptions are unnecessary. 45. Soap and water really are the best defense. Wash your hands is a practical mantra these days, and for good reason. A drop of soap diluted in water literally pries apart the virus, causing the protein-wrapped particles to rupture and become useless. Make sure to wash for a minimum of 20 seconds, dry your hands on a clean towel. In public restrooms, avoid air dryers which blow contaminants all over the place. Number 46. Disinfect your house regularly, but not with antibacterial wipes. Just as antibiotics don't cure viral infection, antibacterial wipes and cleaners are ineffective against viruses. Worse, using antibacterial products can build antibiotic resistance. Instead, use hydrogen peroxide, ammonia, or other FPPA-registered disinfectant products to clean items that may be contaminated with viruses, including the coronavirus. Number 47. Exercise can help you ward off the flu. Don't skip that regular workout. Regular exercise, which can include taking brisk walks, has been shown to improve your immune system, thus decreasing your likelihood of developing a cold or the flu, says Dr. Dallas. But don't overdo it. If you're training for a long marathon, that can have an opposite effect and hurt your immune system, she says. 48. Get a flu shot every year. One of the best ways to prevent flu is to get a flu shot every year. Some children may need two vaccines in one season. There are over 200 strains of viruses, and they can mutate, which is why a new formula is created every season, says Jeremy B.S., Pharm1, a pharmacist in Providence, Rhode Island, and a director of CVS Health. If you're hesitant because of an egg allergy, there are two egg-free vaccines available, Flucalex and Flublok. Drink green tea. According to a meta-analysis published in Molecules, green tea may be an immune-boosting help both for cold and influenza viruses. Researchers found that drinking green tea regularly not only helps you recover from a cold, but may also prevent recurring infections and can make you less likely to get one in the first place. 50. Don't count on herd immunity. You may have read that you can skip getting vaccinated if you live in a place where most people have had the disease or the vaccine, allowing you to take advantage of herd immunity. But effective herd immunity requires that more than 90% of the population be vaccinated against the disease, says Trish Davison, medical writer and author of Vaccines, A History, Science, and Issues in the Vaccine Debate. The exact percentage depends on the contagiousness of the disease, and the flu is very contagious. With current low flu vaccination rate, people should not count on herd immunity to protect them, because it won't. On the flip side, in several Romance languages, the word for roller coaster literally translates to Russian mountains, probably because the ride came from Russia to France in the 19th century. Funnily enough, the Russian phrase translates to American slides, perhaps because of the popularity of the rides in the United States. And the Croatian's word translates to train of death, which means you might not want to ride one there. True crime. The bank robber on the bicycle. Tom Justice takes Olympic gold on his bike, then he uses it as a getaway vehicle. The man in the baseball cap and sunglasses waited for the teller to notice him. The morning of May 26, 2000, was quiet inside the LaSalle Bank in Highland Park, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. "May I help you?" said the young woman behind the counter. The man reached to the back of his khakis as to fish out a wallet. Instead, he presented with an index card. The teller's smile wilted as she read the words. "This is a robbie. Put all of the money in the bag." The robber, a slender man wearing a blue Oxford shirt, returned the card to his pocket. "Nice and easy," he said coolly, handing over a plastic shopping bag. While the teller anxiously transferred bundles of cash, the man gently pressed his palm together as he about to whisper, "Namaste." "Thank you," he said, and walked out the front door. Less than 2 minutes later, he emerged from an underground parking lot, carrying a bicycle on one shoulder and a messenger bag after the other, wearing a red, white, and blue spandex bodysuit. He climbed onto the bike and began to ride leisurely. He cruised up to a trash can. After fishing two crisp $20 bills out of the plastic bag, he held it upside down over the can. Several bundles of cash, 4,009 in all, tumbled into the trash. The man returned the empty sack to his messenger bag and pedaled away. Seated in the bleachers, 13-year-old Tom Justice watched in awe as the cyclist careened around the outdoor track of the Ed Rudolph Velodrome outside Chicago. Every time the pack whirled by, it cut the air, unleashing a concentrated whoosh. Before that summer of 1983, Tom had never seen a bicycle race, let alone a velodrome. But from the moment he entered the stadium, he was transfixed. He returned a week later with his maroon Schwinn. As the stadium lights buzzed, a dozen suburban kids gathered on the track. Everyone was wearing T-shirts and gym shorts except for Tom, who stood out in the professional-grade jersey and padded cycling shorts his father had just bought him. Tom won the 12-to-14-year-old heat handily. Straddling his bike, his chest still heaving, he felt a surge of adrenaline. He had finally found something at which he excelled. His father, Jay Justice, a Navy veteran with an abundance of athleticism, was thrilled. By Tom's junior year at Libertyville High School, his identity hinged on cycling. In 1987, just 4 years after his first velodrome victory, Tom was selected to attend the Olympic training camp in Colorado Springs, Colorado. In the school's 1988 yearbook, one page asked, "What will your friends be doing in 10 years? Tom Justice caption read, "On the cover of a Wheaties box with his bike." But after high school, Tom's commitment to cycling and everything else lapsed. Instead of training, he broke into empty houses to smoke cigarettes and chug beers with his buddies. Somehow, Tom still harbored grandiose expectations. And since nothing else ever clicked for him the way cycling had, after graduating from college, he moved to Los Angeles to train alongside the U.S. Olympic team. He did little to distinguish himself. The other sprinters could tell he lacked discipline. "Tom's fast, but he doesn't train," White one noted. "He needs to apply himself." He soon washed out, returned to Chicago, and found a job as a social worker. Helping people was a welcome distraction from his own issues. But after a while, it felt like a pointless slog. As Tom's Olympic dream slipped away, he fantasized about identities he could substitute for the thrilling instant gratification of cycling. He made a list and then wandered from interview to interview, growing increasingly unhappy with his mundane life. Late one night in 1998, Tom revisited the list he'd added to over the years. Under helicopter pilot and lockpicker, he'd scrawled BR, bank robber. Several notorious American bank robbers had spent time in Chicago. That history added to the allure for Tom. At a wake shop in the same neighborhood where gangster John Dillinger hid out, Tom considered his options. Ultimately, he settled on black braids with short bangs that made him look like super freak Ricker singer Rick James. On October 23rd, Tom entered his parents' garage, grabbed his messenger bag and a Fuji AX500, and pedaled toward downtown Libertyville. He coasted up to a tree-lined fence between two houses and slid on a pair of khakis and a blue Oxford button-down over his cycling spandex. He slipped on his wig and dark oversized sunglasses, reminiscent of Jackie O's, and then continued on foot to the American National Bank branch. When Tom approached the teller, she perked up immediately. Halloween had apparently come early this year. Then the love child of Rick James and Jackie O handed her an index card but wouldn't let go of it. As an awkward tug-of-war ensued, the teller leaned in and read the message. Tom slid his plastic bag across the counter, and she loaded it up with cash. Tom stood outside, bag in hand. His heartbeat surged. His legs tingled. 2 minutes later, he was beside his bike, feverishly stripping down. He shoved the disguise and the money into his messenger bag. Then he casually cycled back to his parents' house. He parked his bike in the garage and tiptoed into the basement. Kneeling on the shag carpet, he looked at the money and began to weep. It had been a long time since Tom felt alive, this alive, or this important. For months, that $5,580 he stole sat in a gym bag inside the closet of his old room in his parents' house. Tom assumed the bills were traceable, so he kept only $220s as souvenirs. Late one night, he tossed the remaining cash into a few dumpsters. Nearly 1 year after his first robbery, Tom committed his second. This time, he discarded the bills in alleys where he knew the homeless people would find them. Robbing banks and giving away the money were intoxicating. Tom saw him as both the mischievous and righteous. But that feeling faded. Tom's real life seemed mediocre and unfulfilling. He wrestled with depression and brooded over the realization that at 29, his window of opportunity to become a world-class cyclist had nearly passed. If he wanted to pursue his Olympic dream, he had to do it now. He told his girlfriend Laura he was moving to Southern California to train for the Olympic trials. He had retained his classification as a Category 1 cyclist, so he had automatically qualified for the trials. When he arrived in California, Tom looked in the mirror and told himself, "I'm not going to rob any more banks." "How's it going?" asked Laura, calling from Chicago. "Well," replied Tom, "his skin was tanned from his time in the San Diego outdoor velodrome. Every morning he worked through the Olympic strength training regimen to build muscle mass. His already explosive dead start was getting deadlier. As the week passed in early 2000, Tom rounded into the best shape of his life. But the monotony of training was setting in. The day after Valentine's Day, he had a bank in Encinitas. On February 29th, one in Solana Beach. The next day, another in Encinitas. 2 weeks later, one in San Diego. On March 24th, Tom robbed two banks, napping his biggest score yet, $10,274. Then one morning, an intensive pain surged through Tom's lower back. He threw it out over training. It would take weeks before he could pedal without waking up in agony the day after. His plan to race in the Olympics trials was over. Soon after he returned to Chicago, Laura dumped him. He moved into an apartment with George, a 230-pound Greek hulk who worked nights. "What do you do?" asked Tom. "I'm a cop," said George. Once his lower back recovered, Tom robbed the LaSalle Bank in Highland Park, the heist which he dumped the $4,009 haul in a trash can. The next week, he hit three banks in 3 days. George had no clue his roommate had just knocked over his 13th bank. In the summer of 2001, Tom joined a club cycling team run by Higher Gear, a bike shop not far from the LaSalle Bank. One day, the shop's manager mentioned to Tom that a local rider was selling a used Steelman. Steelman bikers are exceptional. Tom, whose own bike had recently been stolen, was looking for a replacement. As soon as he saw the Steelman, he was torn. It was a painted garish day-glow orange, but he knew that a used Steelman didn't just magically appear every day, so he bought it. By this point, Tom had stopped giving away the cash from his robberies. He was becoming dependent on drugs. He had no job, but he had pockets full of cash and cocaine. As he increased dosages, his post-high depression deepened. Tom started attending Narcotics Anonymous meetings. When it was his turn to share, he talked about merely experimenting with drugs. He was in denial. "This is going to be my last meeting," he announced after just 6 weeks. He said he was moving back to California. He was planning to apply to grad school there. Everybody in the room wished him luck. 211 is in progress, the voice crackled through the radio in Officer Greg Thompson's squad car. Someone had just robbed a Union Bank in Walnut Creek, California. It was March 7, 2002, a drizzly day. Thompson was passing a parking garage when a bicycle shot out of the driveway and flew behind the cruiser. Tom squinted in his side mirror. The cyclist looked like every other weekend warrior, except for one detail, the messenger bag draped over his shoulder. An 18-year police veteran, Thompson thought the new recruits to thrive on instinct. This was one of those moments. But before he could flash his lights, the cyclist pulled over, hopped off his bike, and started fidgeting with his back wheel. Thompson parked a few feet ahead and walked back to the cyclist. Tom pretended to adjust his brakes before climbing on the bike and clicking his left foot into the pedal. "Do you mind if I take a look in your bag?" Thompson asked. "Yeah, no problem. I just have to unclip," retired Tom. "These pedals are actually counterbalanced, so I need to click into both in order to get out at the same time." There's no such thing as counterbalanced pedals, but Thompson didn't know that. He watched as the cyclist lifted his right foot, clicked down into the pedal, and whoosh, bolted into the street in a dead start as hellacious as any Tom had ever mustered on a velodrome. A few blocks away, Officer Sean Dexter was sitting in a squad car when he spotted a cyclist on an orange bike charging through traffic toward a red light. Dexter pulled into the intersection, but the cyclist didn't stop. Tom swerved around the police car, crossed two lanes, and hopped the curb. Starting through a parking lot, he headed toward a tall fence bordering a thicket of 15-foot-high bamboo. Dexter reached for his radio. Before he could even open his mouth, another cop turned the channel. "A guy on a bicycle just ran for me. I've got him right here," Dexter shouted into the radio. Dexter got out of his car and paced toward the fence. He slowly cracked the gate and peered into the jumbled mess of vegetation. A creek flowed 30 feet below amid fallen tree branches, dry brush, and piles of wet leaves. Sirens blared as officers secured the perimeter. While Dexter and Thompson walked the upper banks, police dog combed the creek. After about 15 minutes, a detective spotted something in the leaves, an orange bicycle. Then a German shepherd from the canine unit led them to a pair of cycling shoes hidden under a concrete retaining wall behind a bridge. As the sky grew bleaker, the search was called off. They had one good clue, though, the orange bicycle. Tom was lying face down in a cold, damp dirt tunnel. Hours earlier, as the orange steelman tumbled through the brush, Tom had slid down the embankment, crashing violently through the leaves. He'd trudged 50 feet upstream and took cover underneath the bridge, where he discovered a 2-foot-wide hole at the water's edge. He crawled in head first and squirmed 11 feet into the narrow tunnel's end. Panting in the dark, he heard sirens, then faint voices, and the jingling of a dog's tags. Tom assumed that was the end, but then a miracle. The cops gave up the search. It was dark when Tom emerged. He had parked his 1983 Mercedes-Benz about 2 miles away. He found and drove it to his apartment in Oakland. "Is everything okay?" asked Tom's roommate at the time, Marty. "Yeah, just a rush couple of days," Tom retired. A 6'5" opera singer, Marty wasn't looking for a new friend, but he'd found one in Tom. Marty knew Tom was snorting cocaine, but he was unaware of his other vices. "What's going on?" asked Marty. "I can't say," Tom said. "Tom, you can tell me anything." Eventually, Tom told Marty everything. "What are you going to do?" "What are you going to do?" Marty asked. "I need to buy a ticket home," Tom said, and he wanted to see his parents before the cops found him. Although he didn't know anything about bikes, Officer Dexter had a hunch that the orange 12-speed was special. He walked it from the station to a nearby bike shop. A guy behind the counter said the frame was custom-made by a man named Steelman. "Then there's a picture of the bike, and it just looks like an ordinary racing bike, but it must be something really special, and it is orange." And spoke to Steelman's wife, who handled the bookkeeping. She told Dexter that the serial number he had might be for a 1996 orange bicycle sold at a shop called Higher Gear in Chicago. Dexter called Higher Gear, but the guy who answered said they didn't keep records that far back. Meanwhile, the FBI was doing its own investigating. A month later, the manager of a bicycle shop in Chicago called the Walnut Creek Police. In 1996, he'd assembled the orange bike. He knew the original owner and the guy who bought it secondhand. Tom and his father sat in the kitchen. It was less than a week since Tom had confessed to Marty. "How's that job of yours?" Jay asked his son. "What's your plan for the future?" As far as he knew, Tom was working as a bike messenger. "I'm going to apply to some new grad school programs, Tom replied. Jay nodded. "That sounds familiar." Tom headed out the door. "See you guys later," he called, and he climbed into his car. When the first police car appeared behind him, Tom didn't think much of it. Then there were three more. Red lights were now flashing. Tom pulled over and glanced back. Five cops were aiming their guns at him. As the handcuffs tightened around his wrists, Tom wanted to cry. Not out of despair or fear, but out of a much heavier sense of something he wasn't expecting. Relief. After 4 years, his self-destructive cross-country loop was finally coming to an end. In the interrogation room, an FBI agent placed a photograph on the table. It was a security cam shot of Tom. The orange steelman had led them right to him. Riding an average bicycle, Tom might never have been caught. He gave a full confession. In all, he had robbed 26 banks and totaled $129,338. He pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 11 years. After being released, Tom returned to cycling at his local velodrome. He also eventually found a job at a donut shop. Little did the cops know that the 49-year-old handing them their chocolate glazed is one of the most prodigious bank robbers in history. Now that we've robbed banks, let's talk about filling up our tummies. And since we are in December and Christmas is not that far away, countertop holiday helpers. Your toaster oven, multi-cooker, blender, and other small appliances can help you delicious hassle-free feast all season long. Here's how. And there's a picture here of a drawing of a bunch of different things like fish and toasters and steam and turkeys and all that other stuff. And little things like a toaster oven, pressure cooker, etc. Holiday gathering will probably be more intimate this year because of COVID-19 pandemic, making an ideal time to turn into small kitchen appliances. These multitaskers simplify the preparation of holiday dishes, leaving more time to enjoy yourself. Plus, they free up your oven so that your main course can roast on its own. Small appliance technology has become so advanced over the past decade that some of them can do most everything an oven can do just on a smaller scale, says Emilio Gonzalez, Associate Director of Lab Operations at Consumer Reports. For instance, in the past, only ovens could convection roast a whole chicken and cook stews low and slow. But these functions, among others, can now be found in toaster ovens, air fryers, multi-cookers, and slow cookers. Here we offer suggestions for making side dishes with air fryers, blenders, multi-cookers, slow cookers, toaster ovens, and waffle makers, plus ways to make the best use of them throughout the year. Use the ratings at the end of this article to choose the best of these appliances for you. Here's to great home-cooked meals this holiday season and beyond. And let's start out with storing your leftovers safely. No matter how many friends and family members you have in your holiday meals, you're bound to have leftovers. And one thing definitely don't want to left is with food poisoning. November and December are the peak months for food poisoning caused by the bacterium Clostridium perfringens, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The cafeteria germ grows in cooked foods, such as turkey, that are kept slightly warmer at room temperature for too long. Here's how to ensure that your leftovers stay flavorful and are safe to eat. Follow the two-hour rule. Bacteria grow fast, so don't leave cooked food out for more than 2 hours from the time it's finished cooking. Store in small batches. If you baked a whole turkey, it may take a while to cool, and its moist raw interior is perfect for bacteria, so slice the meat off the breast for storing. Same goes for big pans of stuffing or dressing. Divide foods into smaller portions first. Keep food refrigerated for 3 to 4 days tops. After that, it might not taste as good. You can keep food for longer by freezing it with a 3 to 4 day window. According to the Department of Agriculture, leftovers should stay good in the freezer for 3 to 4 months at least. Pies are the exception. Fruit pies, such as apple and cherry, can be left on the counter as long as you eat them within a couple of days. But pies with dairy or eggs, such as pumpkin pie, have to be refrigerated. And a slow cooker. Designed to simmer foods at a low temperature for hours, this set-it-and-forget-it appliance is the perfect for soups, stews, beans, and tough cuts of meat, such as brisket, that you want to turn out fork tender. Just place the ingredients in the cooker in the morning, set it high or low, and come home to a hot, ready-to-serve dinner. Common mistakes to avoid. Dairy separates during slow cooking, so add it in the last 15 to 30 minutes for a mix with flour, like scalloped potatoes. Because cooking temperatures are low, Department of Agriculture warns against using frozen meats. They might not reach the safe bacteria-killing temperature. Always thaw meat and poultry in advance. What's new? Certain models come with inserts that can go into the stovetop so you can brown food before slow cooking without dirtying a separate pan. A few high-end models can even brown foods right in the slow cooker. For your feast, it takes half a day to make one side dish in a slow cooker, but you can place the appliance in another room to free up the counter space in the kitchen because you don't have to keep an eye on it while it's cooking. Collard greens. Combine greens, pork, vinegar, salt, sugar, and pepper, then cover and cook on low for 9 hours. If your recipe includes ham hocks, carefully take them out and remove all fat and bone before stirring the meat back into the greens. Scalloped potatoes. Add 1/4 cup of flour to the cream sauce in your scalloped potatoes recipe to help thicken it and keep it from separating in the slow cooker. Dairy will break down during slow cooking. Grease the insert and layer the potatoes and cheese as you would in a casserole dish. Cook on the high setting for 4 to 5 hours until the potatoes are tender. About 20 minutes before the dinner, remove the lid, turn off the slow cooker, and let the potatoes sit so the sauce thickens up. Before serving, pop your slow cooker insert under the broiler to be sure it's oven safe to make the top a nice golden brown. For stuffing, whether you prefer the extra crunchy toasted bits of stuffing or the squishy pieces soaked in herby broth, the slow cooker delivers. The difference between making stuffing in a slow cooker and using an oven is that in a slow cooker, the crunchy parts are on the bottom and the sides rather than the top. Prepare your favorite recipe and spread the stuffing in an even layer in a greased slow cooker. Cook on low heat settings for 3 to 4 hours until the edges are crisp. Southern fried apples. Slice up several Granny Smith apples and place them in a slow cooker with melted butter and the juice from one lemon. Add a couple of tablespoons of cornstarch to a cinnamon sugar mixture and sprinkle it over the apples. The starch will help thicken up the sauce, which would otherwise be too runny. Cook on high for 3 to 4 hours until apples are tender but not mushy. For the rest of the year, slow cookers make it easy to cook large batches of soup and chili. They're still tops when it comes to tenderizing large roasts. You might not have considered using a slow cooker for baking, but it's a great job with custard-baked desserts such as flan and creme brulee. And any time a recipe calls for a water bath, cheesecake for example, you can use your slow cooker. A multi-cooker. One-pot meals that would typically require hours to cook take half the time using multi-cooker's pressure cook mode. It can steam, sauté, and slow cook too, although our tests show that slow cookers are still better at that particular task. Common mistakes. To avoid the pressure cooking mode requires liquid to work properly, but the liquid will not evaporate, so use less than you usually would or your dishes can turn out watery and bland. What's new? Certain models have separate broiling lids, either included or sold separately, that allow you to crisp up your foods once they're cooked. We're also seeing models that can dehydrate and sous vide, whatever that is, for your feast. Take advantage of the speedy pressure cook to make otherwise time-consuming dishes such as wild rice and mac and cheese. Wild rice and mushrooms. Using the sauté function, cook chopped onions and garlic until soft. Add a couple of handfuls of sliced mushrooms, 1 cup of wild rice, 1 cup of brown basmati rice, and 2 cups of water or a low-sodium broth. Stir to combine and cook on high pressure for 30 minutes, then manually release the pressure after 15 minutes, and top with chopped parsley and toasted nuts. Macaroni and cheese. Use 1 quart of water per pound of dry pasta. Cook it for 4 minutes on high pressure, then quick release the pressure. Switch to the sauté setting, add milk, butter, and cheese. Top with a handful of panko, and toast with a crisping lid. Or you can crisp the topping in the microwave by mixing the panko with a little olive oil and stirring every 30 seconds until crumbles are golden brown. Deviled eggs. Hard-boiled eggs prepared using the pressure cook mode peel like a dream. Pour 1 cup of water into the multi-cooker and place the eggs in the steamer basket. Cook at low pressure for 5 minutes. Then let the pressure release naturally. Place the eggs in cold water to stop the cooking process. Peel the eggs and slice them in half. Scoop out the yolks and make the filling to your liking. For the rest of the year, it seems every dish under the sun has been adapted for the multi-cooker, but we still find that this appliance is best for stews, beans, and tough cuts of meat. It makes fast and flavorful chuck roast and pork shoulder, and an amazing ribs. If you're new to the multi-cookie, start with recipes designed for it, because there is a learning curve. Your toaster oven. A toaster oven can bake, roast, and broil, and is up to the most any task your full-sized oven can accomplish, just on a smaller scale. That makes it a smart standby when the oven is occupied or when you're cooking for just a few people. Common mistakes to avoid. As with baking in a full-sized oven, a dark-colored pan accelerates the transfer of heat, possibly causing roasted vegetables or cookie bottoms to burn. So use a light-colored pan instead or lower the temperature by 25 degrees. What's new? In the past 5 years, certain toaster ovens have added features such as air firing, convection, dehydrating, and slow cooking. For your feast, consider the toaster oven a trusty sidekick to your full-sized oven, great for baking rolls and casseroles and roasting meats in smaller portions. And for those of us that are cooked for just themselves, it's great for all kinds of stuff. Rolls or cornbread. If your toaster can fit an 8-inch cake pan, most models we tested can, you can make 10 to 12 dinner rolls. Put balls of dough in a pan and bake at 375 degrees for 20 minutes until golden brown. Cornbread also bakes nicely. Use a muffin pan for perfectly portioned pieces. Sweet potato casserole. Mash boiled or roasted sweet potatoes with a little milk, butter, salt, lemon juice, brown sugar, and spice, such as nutmeg, cinnamon, or allspice. You can skip the egg binder called for in larger recipes. Spread the mixture in a buttered baking dish that will fit in the toaster oven. Top with chopped nuts or marshmallows and bake at 350 degrees until it's heated through and the topping is toasted. Turkey breast or leg. Try roasting just a turkey breast or legs if you have a small gathering this year. You might not get enough drippings to make gravy, but you can make it the broth or serve the turkey with chimichurri. The turkey may take less time in the toaster oven than in a conventional oven. If you're using more than one rack, move the top pan to the bottom and vice versa, halfway through, and rotate each pan so that the turkey cooks uniformly. For the rest of the year, bring your toaster oven summertime. This means you won't have to crank up the heat in your oven and roast yourself in the hot kitchen. From shrimp scampi to a whole chicken, a toaster oven can handle anything your oven can, just in smaller portions. It makes great toast, too, so it can replace a toaster. However, it tends to take longer to make toast in a toaster oven. Based on our taste test, toaster ovens make anywhere from 3 to 9 minutes on a modern medium setting. Toasters take 2 to 4 minutes. And we look at a blender. Sauces, puree, heats up healthy. A blender. Sure, blenders are great for smoothies, but you can also use them to make velvety purees or sauce to go with your favorite foods. Some can even heat ingredients using the friction of the blades, so you don't have to separately heat up, say, soup. Common mistakes to avoid. Hot ingredients can cause certain blenders to malfunction. Check your blender's manual to see whether or not ingredients can be used. If the blender lid doesn't have a vent hole, heat will build up pressure which can cause the lid to pop off. What's new? A growing number of models can heat ingredients while blending, so you can pair soup without using the stovetop. For your feast, make a soup or an herb sauce to accompany the meal. Curried squash soup. If you have a high-performance blender that heats, toss in cubes of raw or roasted squash, some broth, garlic cloves or shallots, carrots, celery, curry powder, any other seasonings you like. Start the blender on its lowest speed, then increase it to a high speed and blend for 6 minutes, or until steam escapes from the vented lid. If you have a traditional blender, roast or saute the ingredients first, blend, and then heat on the stove. This garlicky herb sauce, widely used in Argentina and Uruguay, goes well with roasted turkey and most any side dish. Blend some parsley, oregano, red peppers, flakes, garlic, vinegar, salt, and olive oil, and it's ready to serve. For the rest of the year, come summertime, make healthy smoothies, festive margaritas, and chilled soups. Blenders are also great for do-it-yourself plant-based milk. For small batches of foods, such as fresh sauces and salad and dressings, a blender is better than a food processor, which requires a high volume of food to work properly. Air fryer. Air fryer circulates hot air around food to cook it quickly and create a deliciously crisp texture using less fat than deep frying, with just 1 or 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Brussels sprouts and cauliflower come out tender yet irresistibly crispy. Asparagus is beautifully blistered, and salmon fillets are moist inside and nicely browned outside. You can even use an air fryer to bake banana bread. Banana bread emerges with an extra crispy top. All the air fryers in our test turn out nicely cooked food. The biggest differences are their capacity, how easy they are to use and clean, and how much noise they make. Common mistakes to avoid. Food can cook unevenly or turn out soggy if a batch is too large. For best results, don't overfill the basket and shake it every 5 minutes or so for even browning. What's new? Air frying has become so popular that we're seeing this function added to all kinds of other appliances, including toaster ovens, microwaves, and multi-cookers. We tested the function as part of the evaluation of the toaster oven, microwave, and multi-cooker models that featured in our test, and all of them made delicious, crispy foods such as chicken, fries, and spring rolls. For your feast, use this roast potatoes or cooked veggies for your holiday meals. Brussels sprouts. For beautifully brown but tender Brussels sprouts, trim the ends. Then toss the sprouts with just enough olive oil to coat. Season with salt and pepper and air fry for 20 minutes at 360 degrees Fahrenheit. Carrots. Toss up carrots with a bit of melted butter and honey. Season with a sprinkling of salt, pepper, and coriander for whatever spices you feel like using. And air fry at 400 degrees Fahrenheit for 30 minutes. Roasted potatoes. An air fryer will yield golden taters that are crisp on the outside and creamy on the inside. Toss fingerlings or marbled potatoes with just enough olive oil to coat them, and season with a touch of salt and black pepper. Air fry at 400 degrees for 15 to 20 minutes. For the rest of the year, say goodbye to soggy pizza and dried out fried chicken by using an air fryer instead of the microwave to reheat them. You can avoid having to fire up your oven just to cook the crisp small potato portions too. Fish and veggies, including kale chips, come out delicious in an air fryer. They were even a hit with the kids who tried them in the taste test we conducted at CR Labs. A waffle maker. The best waffle makers in our toast make almost foolproof to churn out evenly browned waffles. Certain models come with portioned batter cups that make guesswork out of how much batter to use and indicators that tell you when a waffle is done. We test round and square Bajan waffle makers in our labs. Common mistakes to avoid. Most waffle makers have a nonstick coating, which can be damaged by nonstick cooking sprays, affecting performance. Use a pastry brush dipped in oil or melted butter to grease the iron instead. What's new? We're seeing more and more vertical waffle makers that cook waffles sideways, which saves counter space. You pour the batter through a spout on the top, but we haven't tested any of these models yet. For your feast, if your guests fight over the crispy, crunchy bits of stuffing or dressing, they'll love waffles made of the stuff. You get the crispy texture all over each waffle, plus gravy wells built in. Oh, that's cool. Stuffing waffles. Any classic stuffing recipe will work. Instead of cooking in the oven, lightly grease a waffle maker with butter or oil and pack it evenly with stuffing. Cook until it reaches your preferred level of brownness. For the rest of the year, a waffle maker can be used to pair many dishes in addition to waffles. There are instructions online for cooking omelets, hash browns, brownies, and many other foods in a waffle maker. How to lighten up your holiday meals. Meals are too important to holiday celebrations to consider whether or not you should serve both rolls and stuffing, or if you should skip marshmallow sweet potatoes this year. Heartburn aside, most people, there's little harm in indulging occasionally. Still, some recipes, tweaks, and a menu ideas can make a holiday mealtimes a little healthier without affecting the flavor. Our advice, don't mess with your favorite traditional recipes, but try swapping or adding ingredients to the less sacred dishes. Just be sure to do a test run before you're planning to serve them. Skip the cream. Use Greek yogurt or whole milk instead of in the mashed potatoes, creamy soups, and creamed onions or spinach recipes. Reduce the sugar. Cut it back by 10-25% in making recipes. You'll barely taste the difference. Add some fiber. Replace 25-50% of all-purpose flour called for in recipes with whole wheat flour, or try half all-purpose, half white whole wheat flour, a lighter, milder version of the whole grain. If your recipe calls for breadcrumbs or panko, opt for whole wheat. Upgrade the stuffing. Replace half the white bread with whole wheat, use low-sodium chicken broth, and add extra vegetables such as carrots, mushrooms, and peppers. Be sodium savvy. Use the flavors of the seasoned sage, rosemary, cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves will cut the need for salt. Choose low-sodium broths and homemade dressings which are lower in sodium than many bottled ones. Boost nutrition. Adding small but mighty nutrition powerhouses can make food healthier and more flavorful. Try pomegranate seeds, dried cranberries, or chopped dried apricots in salads, and roasted pumpkin seeds or chopped nuts in stuffings. Skip the chips and dip. Instead of serving heavy appetizers before a meal, have a pot of roasted vegetable soup, such as carrot or butternut squash, on the stove for the guests to enjoy. When someone presents a very questionable viewpoint, I agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong. And if you own funny savings like this, read these comebacks. This is from the Reader's Digest. When your friend complains about Weight Watchers, I'm on a seafood diet. I see food, and then I eat it. When you can't stand to listen to someone for one more second, I'm sorry, I have to go. You're boring me to death, and my survival instincts are kicking in. That's kind of cold. When Aunt Muriel asks you when you're going to have kids, I'm jealous of my parents. I'll never have a kid as cool as theirs, one who is smart, has devilishly good look, and knows all sorts of funny sayings. When someone makes a comment about your small stature, you know what they say, dynamite comes in small packages. When Beyoncé concert tickets go on sale, my wallet is like an onion. Every time I open it, it makes me cry. When someone calls you weird or strange, that just means I'm a limited edition. I'm something you don't see very often. When your friends give you the single raised eyebrow, don't worry. If plan A doesn't work, there are 25 more letters in the alphabet. You also want to miss... Oh, never mind, that's something else. When you're online trolled by someone with a terrible grammar and or spelling, I'd be offended, but I'm too busy mentally correcting your errors. Get a lot of those. When you're told to get your butt off the couch, I'm not lazy, I'm just very relaxed. When someone is bringing the mood down, why be moody when you can shake your booty? When you see motivational posters in your office, don't you tell me the sky is the limit when there are footprints on the moon? when someone is oversharing their vast knowledge. Unless your name is Google, stop acting like you know everything. When you're stuck in a tough situation, somebody said today that I'm lazy. I almost answered him. When nothing is going your way, life is like a bowl of soup and I have a fork. When your friend acts overly ambitious, you can't have everything. Where would you put it? When exercising is a struggle, that fits me, I finally found a machine at the gym that I like, the vending machine. When you just can't get over the breakup, if you can't live without me, then why aren't you dead yet? When your nephew wants an iPhone and AirPods for Christmas, when I was your age, I was psyched to get new markers. When your family is concerned about your weight, I get enough exercise just by pushing my luck. When you're eating out with health-conscious friends, my brain says eat a salad, but my heart says eat pizza. When people ask why you're still single, my bed and I are perfect for each other, but my alarm clock keeps trying to break us up. When your signs see the bright side, if the world didn't suck, we'd all fall off. When you finally decide to stop procrastinating, I made a huge to-do list today. I just need to figure out who's going to do it. When you're under some stress, a diamond is just a lump of coal that did well under pressure. When others second-guess your life choices, when people tell me you're going to regret that in the morning, I sleep until noon because I'm a problem solver. When your clothes are a little rumpled, I do all my ironing in the dryer. When your family jokes about you being over the hill, birthdays are good for you. Study shows that people who have most of them live the longest. I like that one. When you're not a morning person, I always say morning instead of good morning. If it were good morning, I'd still be sleeping and not talk to people. When your spouse addresses your late-night snacking, if you're not supposed to eat at night, then why is there a light bulb in the refrigerator? When those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind, it's okay if you don't like me. Not everyone has good taste. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.